Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. Our guest this week is Daniel Harms, who writes for the RGR, does film breakdowns, I should say, for the RGR football website about the Kansas City Chiefs. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Ken. I appreciate it.
Always great to meet new people. This is the first time we've talked, but why don't you talk a little bit to start with about the Chiefs offseason at what worked out and maybe what didn't.
Yeah, so this offseason was a little bit of a coming-to-earth moment after they lose to the Philadelphia Eagles in the fashion that they did. They obviously don't have a left tackle. They take Joe Tooney, who was their left guard. They had him at left tackle last year for the end of the year into the Super Bowl, and then we see how he gets traded because they want to extend Trey Smith. So they pay him the $24 million contract near the end of training, the length that they had, you know, that time limit that they have just to extend people after the franchise tag. They were able to get that deal done right before the franchise tag thing came up. And they went into this offseason with some question marks at tackle because they bring in Jalen Moore, who only had 5 starts to his career with the San Francisco 49ers. So there's a little up in the air. It wasn't a hugely guaranteed contract. It wasn't a big money signing either. It was more of a, well, we're going to kind of see how this works out, and then we can get to the draft a little bit later. But when you looked around, it was, all right, they're going to have Rashee Rice come back from the injury. There was still the uncertainty of the suspension, which we now know was given to him, a 6-game suspension. They had Xavier Worthy, who talked about, you know, how everything kind of started to slow down finally. He's starting to play a little bit faster on the offensive side. Then they had some contracts on the defensive side they wanted to get done as well. Really, the guy who really stood out last year, Tershawn Wharton, goes to the Carolina Panthers for a big money contract, a defensive tackle. They bring back Nick Bolton, their middle linebacker, who on another fairly good contract. George Karlaftis as well, some of their homegrown talent. They still want to get Trent McDuffie, one of the all-pro corners in the league, get his contract done, but they waited. They're going to be waiting until probably next offseason. So this was a pretty much more of a bet on themselves and their homegrown talent offseason. And so with some of the contracts they handed out, and then we see how the season started. But that's really how the offseason went for them.
Okay. All right. And the top draft picks this year?
So the very first one, we all have now seen Josh Simmons out of Ohio State. He had that weird patella tendon injury. Everyone thought it might have been a full tear, but when the Chiefs drafted him, they did their due diligence and they found out it was only a partial tear, which gave them the confidence to draft him at the end of the first round. Being able to trade back with the Eagles to even do that was fun to see. And then you have some second round picks that were questionable. Omar Norman Lott, defensive tackle out of Tennessee, seldom used, more of a pass rush kind of guy. Interior, we're going to see how you can get off the ball, attack guys in the defense, but we don't know much about your run stopping ability. They put a lot of chips on that because with Tershawn Wharton leaving, they didn't really know what their defensive line was going to look like, you know, bringing in Jerry Tillery, a utility guy. There was a lot of question marks there. They also draft Ashton Gelati, defensive end out of Louisville, a little undersized, not as long in the arm, but effort, understands the game very well. Third round defensive back Noel Williams out of Cal, one of my favorite players on the defensive side from this past draft as well. I loved his game, and we're already seeing him start to come out a little bit of his shell due to some injuries along that as well. But then you get into day 3, and this is really where the Chiefs have done a good job for the most part in finding guys that can make a difference in your roster. So I don't want to leave anybody out. The fourth round was Jalen Royals, another one of my favorite players. Utah State, great, he had receiver. A foot injury. Yeah, he had a foot injury about 5 games into the season, I think, last year, and that derailed his status. He got to the Senior Bowl, and he didn't look fully healthy yet, but at the Senior Bowl, you still see he was able to make guys miss and be tough at the catch point. So he is another one of my favorite players from that. You know, got Jeffrey Bossa as well, linebacker out of Oregon, who was a former safety, so you bring some coverage aspect to the linebacker room that desperately needed it. And then Breshard Smith, a running back out of SMU, former wide receiver, played at Miami, and then he makes the transition to running back, going to SMU, has a big breakout year his last year, and they draft him for some explosion there.
All right, so one of the things I'll also bring up related to the draft, the Ravens end up drafting Mike Green in the second round at number 59, and one of the reasons DaCosta gave after the draft was that we knew if we didn't take him that the Chiefs would in three picks. Or it might have been three picks, it might have been two, mm-hmm. whatever it was. But they ended up, you know, making the selection at that point. I think it's going to work out for the Ravens. He hasn't had a sack yet, but he's looked pretty slippery in the preseason against competition. Do you think the Chiefs would have pulled the trigger on that?
I think if he would have fallen to them there in the second round, absolutely. Specifically because if you look at, I think even though Ashton Gelati is more of a Steve Spagnuolo type at the defensive end position, where that effort, the run stopping, he knows how to use his length well, even though he doesn't have a lot of it, that the motor, that all is there. But I think that they still needed somebody. They tried to do this with Felix Anudike-Uzama, who got hurt in the preseason this year. They tried to make him more of a, we want you to stop the run, use your length, and be more of a physical guy. He was a little bit undersized in terms of weight coming out of Kansas State. He put on some weight. They wouldn't have had to do that with Mike Green. So I don't know for absolute certain if they would have done it, because I haven't gotten any confirmation of that, but it would not have surprised me. But it does feel like Ashton Gelati was more of a, or maybe even Omar Norman Lott was more of a, just a backup pick in that situation.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, let's move on. We'll talk about where Patrick Mahomes is now as a quarterback. You know, you've seen obviously an evolution over the years, but what's different about him in 2025 than in past years?
I think right now what he's doing is every year from the year they traded Tyreek Hill, things have they've had to change, right? The ball has to come a little bit faster. He doesn't he doesn't want to wait for the play to develop as much, because the connection that Tyreek and Travis Kelce had on any individual play, it could be 3, 4, 5 seconds, and then you could find one of those players because he was so good at extending. It's a new wide receiver room. So every year it feels like he's had to figure out, all right, I need to read defense. Where is my first read, but where do I need to go with the football? All that pre-snap identification. He's become, I think, the best pre-snap quarterback in the NFL, because everyone's like, well, he goes in and out. He throws the ball here. He gets away to his first receiver all the time. That's because he knows exactly where the ball's supposed to go based on the given defensive leverage, everything like that. So he's gotten to the point now where that's what he has to do, but you're also down Xavier Worthy. You're down Rashee Rice. The running game doesn't give you a whole lot, as we'll detail as well. So I think he's gotten to the point where if the ball doesn't come out fast, he's almost in panic mode. Last year, the offensive line did not protect him well enough. He was very jittery in the pocket, and he's carried some of that over to this year. It's also a new left side. You're dealing with Kingsley Suamataia. As you guys remember, in the first game of the season last year, was a starting left tackle. That was new welcome to the NFL moment for him. Obviously, he gets benched a week later, and now he's at guard, and Josh Simmons is next to him. There is growth that's happening. There's evident growth, but there's going to be some working pains, some growing pains with that as well. And honestly, Trey Smith and Juwan Taylor, who are veterans, have not played up to their standards. And I'll say Trey Smith has not played up to his contract. You get $24 million, you can reset the guard market. He's having some, at least right now, early season struggles. Maybe it's meshing more with Juwan Taylor. Personally, and in my opinion, I don't think those two players mesh well. We know that Juwan Taylor wants to get off the football very, very quickly and get to his spot before the defensive end can get there. That's what he does. That's why he has trouble with the penalties. He's getting off the ball. He's trying to get out there. Mm-hmm. And it creates a giant void, a giant B gap next to Trey Smith, who wants to be more of an aggressive player.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to Kingsley Suamataia, but I want to let you finish this point first. with regard to those guys. All right, was that the end of it, or was there
more? No, I was just going to say
giant B gap. Trey Smith does not adapt to as easily to having that there.
All right. Yeah.
So let's go back to Kingsley Suamataia, who's one of my favorite players coming into the 24 draft. And I always will crow over the picks that I was right about. So I'm definitely going to have to take the heat for this one. I was really wrong about Kingsley. Do you feel like the Chiefs really wanted Roger Rosengarten, and the Ravens just happened to be drafting at the right spot to get him ahead of Kansas City?
I don't, actually. I think that Kingsley was the guy for them, and I was high on him too. I had like a fringe first round grade on him. Yeah. Like the traits were there. You watch him, like, you can see everything. And I'm not going to put it all on Kingsley, because I also believe that development for a guy when he is as raw as he is needs time. And when you're coming off of two straight Super Bowl wins, you're going for a three-peat, there's a lot of added pressure on a rookie who was raw to begin with to start. And then they say, we're not going to allow you the time to develop in game, which you need more reps to be able to do. And they bench him, which stunts the growth from that type of player. So yes, Kingsley has still had some of his own growing pains as a guard, but some of the problems that he had last year have carried over to this year because he didn't physically learn how to deal with those situations in the game. So now he's having to do it in a whole different position. Mm-hmm. I personally think that the Chiefs stunted his growth a little bit there. And maybe in a 2 or 3 year stretch, if the Chiefs had time to figure out and they were a bad team, maybe then Kingsley would have been able to develop. But they're in a situation where that didn't happen. And they did get a little bit lucky here with Josh Simmons in Kansas City.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's a good pick. But anyway, take us through the rest of the offensive line. I don't want to get too far behind on time, but we definitely want to go through each of the five.
Yeah, so Juwan Taylor this year has been, I think he's been fine in a pass protection standpoint, but he's struggled with run blocking, the penalties as well. I think at some point you have to ask yourself, you brought Juwan Taylor in as a young player. You paid him a bunch of money, essentially. He's on the cap hit for $27 million this year, I think. What's it worth to you if he's going to continue to have the penalties? You bring in Jalen Moore, who you actively practiced at right tackle. You played him at right tackle in the preseason. What's the trade-off here? Are we telling ourselves that because he's $27 million against the cap, we have to pay this guy, we have to play this guy? Or are the penalties going to continue to happen? Because everyone knows the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And Juwan has been penalized for the last 3 years, and it has negatively impacted them from every single game, especially in the red zone. So
how much of a topic of talk radio or Twitter has that been over these last couple of years with Taylor?
Ever since the penalty started, but go back to that Jacksonville game where they benched him because of the penalties, and then they had to bring him back two drives later. It's been an ongoing discussion. This is in every single week, especially with the weeks that he has multiple penalties. But because of the presence of Jalen Moore in Kansas City this year, it's become more of an immediate talking point because there is a de facto swing tackle that you could say he might not be as penalized as this guy. And if he's just marginally the same kind of player or gives you a little bit more in the run game, maybe, and maybe just a touch less as a pass protection standpoint, what's the trade-off here?
You know, one of the interesting things, I mean, Taylor's been penalized 7 times, if I see this correctly, this year already in 3 games.
Yeah.
That's amazing. but let's go over this here just for Ravens fans. I know you know all this and probably don't want to relive it, but the last 3 years, 19 times last year he was penalized and 24 times in 2023, which has got to be close to a record. That's an enormous number of penalties. But, there's one thing I'm going to say about PFF is they really underweight penalties in their formula, meaning it's not as bad to have a lot of penalties. And I've been pointing this out for a player like Daniel Faalele, who doesn't get penalized much at all anymore. He's really outperforming that, or a player like Linderbaum is really underperforming that because he has a lot of penalties. That's interesting I guess it's not surprising. It'd be a continual talk. Where do you see this? How do you see the end game playing out for this?
Actually, one of my, I guess, tinfoil hat theories in the offseason when Jalen Moore was brought in, I thought they were going to try to draft Josh Simmons anyway, because I thought this was going to be something that happened because he had to take the year off, and most teams wouldn't have had the time frame to sit Josh Simmons for the entire year. Yeah. But if you have Jalen Moore, you're like, okay, well, we can start you at left tackle, we can bring Josh Simmons along, and then next year, Juwan Taylor's money can come off the books because you can cut him. I believe you can save around $20 million against the cap next year. And then you can say, we have our tackles now. Maybe you can extend more a little bit earlier. But then I thought, as we get closer through the draft and we know more about the injury, I'm like, well, Jalen Moore's there. And we find out Juwan Taylor had a knee surgery because of an injury that he didn't really tell anybody about. Andy Reid's very good at like manipulating. I think all NFL coaches are very good at just saying, oh, it's a knee injury. It's not a big deal. But in the offseason, he got it cleaned up. And then they talk about the flight down to Sao Paulo, having to manage the knee swelling for Juwan Taylor. Everyone's like, if it's already having an issue here in week 1, there's got to be something else down the line here.
Okay, so long flight. But you think they'd manage to have an elevated foot situation an older person, you know, who's subject to DVT and whatnot on flights. I think that's it's understandable that that might happen to even a young guy who's got a problem there. All right. So Creed Humphrey is still the best in the game.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. Still to start the year. He's had some losses here and there, a little bit because of some miscommunications with young player next to him in Kingsley. But again, not having the best Trey Smith has had to offer as well. But in regards to what he's done, he's been still the best center in football. And I'm really not worried about him at all. I do think the continuity as the season goes along with not just Trey Smith, I think he'll play better, but also Kingsley. That's going to help as well when you're transitioning younger players from left to right. When he played tackle, Kingsley did. Now he's playing guard. You have to teach him a little bit on the fly. And now you're trying to get everyone's ideal sense of, well, I have to take this block here, but also I have to trust that you're going to take this if I'm going to go to the second level. So understanding when to turn that block a little bit or give a little bit more help to Kingsley and then go to the second level or go to the second level immediately sometimes can have some lasting impact.
Okay. So I'm seeing kind of mixed signals from this because the Chiefs have spent a lot of draft capital in terms of their left guard and a lot of of cap space in terms of their right guard. Yeah. Kingsley, he's a second round contract, I guess. So he's making a couple million dollars a year, right? Do the Chiefs really subscribe to the notion that you have to provide your very mobile quarterback a great offensive line all the way across to get the most out of him? The Ravens have chosen exactly the opposite route, and they basically said we can try and play for less, go cheap at guard because we have an expensive quarterback, we have all kinds of other expensive defensive players that we need to pay, but guard is a place where it has not hurt us to have inexpensive players there.
Yeah, I think when we look at how the Chiefs construct specifically their defensive back room, I know Trent McDuffie is going to get paid, but everywhere else it's relatively cheap. They paid Nick Bolton as well. Like they gave Drew Tranquil, linebacker, a smaller deal. Mm-hmm. They have found different ways to facilitate around. And even George Kolaris' contract, it wasn't like a huge top end of the deal contract. It was a good value with not a ton guaranteed. Like I think it was around $60 million guaranteed of what he had total of the $90-ish million dollar contract. So they found different ways to move the defensive players around. And also they've figured out that corner is where they can just kind of put anybody that they want to and they'll be fine. Like Najee Johnson, seventh round pick a few years ago, Jalen Watson, who is playing fantastic football for them right now in a contract year, is another seventh round draft pick. Like they've been able to kind of pull it together in the corners and even the safeties. You've got a fourth round pick, a third round pick right now as your safeties. So there's a lot of youth and day three talent playing in the defensive secondary. And, you know, aside from Kingsley, they want to put guys in front of Mahomes. Like they want to invest money. The Juwan Taylor one was a bet on upside. It was, you played pretty well in Jacksonville. You're 25 years old. We're going to pay you like you're going to get better. And he hasn't necessarily gotten better. The penalties have gotten worse. So after that Tampa Bay Buccaneers catastrophe of a Super Bowl where they were just so injured on the offensive line, Patrick couldn't really do anything. They did. They invested. They paid a lot of money out. And I think that over the course of this season, you'll see whenever Trey Smith does get better, whether it's Juwan Taylor or Jalen Moore playing, and then that left side construction and just development getting better. You'll see some of that start to get better. But I think already it's better from an offensive line perspective than it was last year.
All right, take us through the skill position players now, and you can do it in whatever order you want, wide receiver, tight end, running back. Yeah.
Well, we're going to start with maybe one of the worst rooms in the NFL in the Chiefs running back room because it's not good. Isaiah Pacheco has been that juice man for an offense, like somebody you hand the football out to, he just goes and he wants to run through somebody. But every year he's gotten hurt, and I think that it not only – for a guy who ran a 4.39 at the combine, but it was more buildup speed. He is not someone who gets to top speed very quickly. He needs a hole. He needs to get outside and needs to be able to get downhill quickly to be able to do that. We have seen the burst that he did have dissipate and disappear completely. So on top of not having that and already having poor vision as a seventh round draft pick, which was the reason he got drafted in the seventh round, didn't have great vision. It was more of contact balance and effort that got him to where he did in Kansas City. When you don't have that little burst that you did have and you can't play with patience, we're seeing some of that issues right now where, yeah, the offensive line maybe not all the way there with some of the blocking connectivity. You see some, like one block here on an outside zone play doesn't get picked up properly. And if you're Isaiah Pacheco, who needs to get to this one spot, you can't stop and pivot back the other way or find a hole in the middle. You need those blocks all the way through. So unfortunately for him, he's having a worse year coming off of another injury than the Chiefs expected him to. Kareem Hunt, for everything he has visually, I think that there's still a lot of good football between the tackles for him. Juice is gone as well. He doesn't have the explosiveness. Top end speed is gone. So he's really more of your, we're going to try to get 5 to 6 yards. If we get 7, that's awesome. But if you get 3, that's probably where we're going to see. And then it's Breshard Smith, who's a 7th-round pick that they have not put a lot on yet. More of a utility player, again, former wide receiver. So they're using him on motions, jet sweeps, orbit motions, screens, things like that. They haven't really handed him the ball off a ton this season. So the running back room is not good. It's not helping Patrick Mahomes at all, really, in the sense that you want him to not have to run. You want him to not have to do more. But we have not invested in the running back position to see that come to fruition.
There's also there's only one running back taken from all the cuts across the entire league this year, which is a little surprising to me. Not in general, in a typical year, it wouldn't have surprised me, but with the new kickoff rules, there seems to be a general feeling that it's more like a zone run play and that running backs are the better choice to have people returning kicks. Has that been subscribed to in Kansas City, or who's back there? Is it your punt returner who's returning kickoffs, or who is it?
They have a receiver, Nico Remigio, does returning kicks. Also, Breshard Smith is back there too. So he is the kick returner with Nico Remigio, who has experience as the Chiefs punt returner and kick returner from last year. So he's more of a return specialist. You see Remigio on some end arounds as well. He finally got one last week against the Giants. But Breshard Smith has been the Chiefs, I guess, de facto kickoff return guy. So it makes sense to me that you would want to have more running backs back there just based on the visual aspect. And to that point, there were some young running backs in this class that I liked. Damian Martinez comes to mind, who's been on a practice squad, who was released from the Seattle practice squad, that I was like, well, why is Clyde Edwards-Helaire in your guys' practice squad? But you don't want to bring in somebody who was even better. I don't know. That's some of the things that are coming to my mind.
Okay. All right. There's only one guy, and it was Raheem somebody. I think Raheem Sanders, maybe. Of the Browns was the only guy who was taken. And I thought that the Ravens would cut a running back. They're carrying 4 running backs right now. It doesn't look like Keaton Mitchell is going to play again, which is – Ravens fans are up in arms about it.
You know, I would be too.
Yeah, well, 2 years ago, you know, he had that great year, and last year he was hurt and finally came back. It was a long struggle back. And now, you know, Rasheen Ali, who returned to kickoff, you know, 45 or 50 yards this last week. Now, it's almost like that's a bad thing. It's because he'll be out there. But anyway, it looks like Mitchell will be inactive again for what that's worth. Wide receivers, how about we talk about those?
Yeah. So, as you guys know, I said earlier, right now they don't have Xavier Worthy because of his injury. We'll see if he...
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies. 100% federally legal THC blends discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
He comes back this week. There's optimism. He plays against Baltimore. Rashee Rice is still serving your suspension. So your number one receiver in Kansas City is Hollywood Brown, who, again, much like Isaiah Pacheco, the injuries year over year over year have taken its toll on his ability to be the deep threat that he was with Baltimore early on with the Cardinals. So he's more of a possession, in my opinion, from what I'm seeing on tape. He doesn't create enough separation, but he's more of a, we're going to still try to use your speed every now and then. And we see you more as that 1 to 10 yard guy. We're immediate. If you have space, we're going to get it to you. Maybe you can make somebody miss, but he's really lost that ability. It wasn't really his like strength anyway. He was never that guy you want to go out there and just make him a bunch of guys miss. Definitely more of a straight line speed, get into one cut and go kind of player. And honestly, the emergence of Tyquan Thornton has made that less of an issue because, you know, as a second round pick from Baylor, he goes to play for the Patriots and doesn't ever find his footing there. And I'm not saying that he gets open off of like press coverage a lot because that's where he still struggles. He is a very tall, broad chested player. He doesn't use his hands very well at the line of scrimmage. He can get jammed. I think the best explanation of this was against the Giants. You see him get pressed and Travis Kelce get pressed at the line of scrimmage. And this was the throw that he took away from Hollywood Brown on the left side of the field where Patrick is running to his right and he throws across his body. And Tyquan's only there because he got pushed down and then found his space. So you still see the speed for him coming through, but he's finding that connection with Patrick Mahomes as a deep threat when they don't have Xavier Worthy and they don't have Rashee Rice, which I think is a big thing for when those guys do and eventually come back. And then Juju Smith-Schuster has really been the only other receiver to do anything for Kansas City this year. He's taken over that, I guess, Rashee Rice role in the sense where he's going to be over the middle of the field. We're going to scheme up some plays for him, find space. He's still very, very savvy in how he creates a little bit of space for himself, sits down in zone. So, I mean, honestly, those are the three receivers that the Chiefs have been operating with.
Okay, so this is the surprising number for Thornton is this, and I'm not that surprised given how I saw Mahomes throwing to him late, and I think it was the week 2 game. Did he have a touchdown late on a long
bomb? Yes, he did. Bomb?
Okay. So his ADOT this year, 18 targets. So this is not a tiny number of targets. It's 25.2. Now, so he's only got nine and a half, which is a very good number in terms of yards per target, but 25.2 in ADOT, that's unreal. Unreal.
It's kind of crazy because Patrick has missed him multiple times too. There was not just before the deep ball in Philly, like against the Eagles, he had one that he was wide open and Pat just sailed it on him. He could have had a big play and against the Chargers. He ran his route towards the safety where he's open, but Patrick throws him away from the safety. So that was just a little bit of a miscommunication of where you're expected to be. Receivers, if you're running down the field, don't run towards the safety. It's pretty much a quarterback's going to tell you, run away from the coverage. If you're open, get away from that coverage, and they're going to want to lead you to that. So the emergence, again, a Tyquan Thornton, when you don't have Xavier Worthy on the field, he's been like their only explosive part of the offense, which is a little troubling to say the least.
Yeah. Well, think about what for Ravens fans, what Tez Walker has done. It's only been four receptions for him, but there's some nice, it's just nice to have one other target that Lamar kind of gives a little bit of trust to. All right. It's great. You didn't take us through the tight ends. Current state of Travis Kelce or Gray.
Yeah, I can get there real quick because Travis, I think he looks a little bit better athletically than he did last year. But there's a lot of effort concerns for me right now. Blocking, he used to just kind of get by. And right now we're seeing him actively avoid blocks at times. And that's not what you want from Travis Kelce. I understand like this is probably your last year. But I think he's frustrated because maybe physically he can't do what he wants to be able to do. So I don't know. That's me just speaking based off what I see on tape. I do see him taking some time off where he needs to be blocking a little bit more, but the connection with him and Pat is off. It's completely off. They don't have whatever it was. They're working through some offensive struggles right now in their own mind, that telepathic communication they used to have. It's just a hair in the wrong direction where Travis is moving when Pat's like sit down or Travis is not seeing the football right where Pat throws it. So they're going to work through that because they are still mentally those players when it comes to receiving. I'm more worried about the blocking from Travis Kelce myself. Noah Gray finally had some up game last week against the Giants. He finally found himself getting open in one-on-one situations with some linebackers, some safeties. You could see him actually create space for himself, get some more targets. He's been a disappointment to start the year, and not necessarily his own fault. Again, offense is trying to find themselves without Rashee Rice, without Xavier Worthy. You're trying to work some things out. I think they finally worked a little bit out with 12 personnel as well with Travis Kelce and Noah Gray. I'm a little more surprised that Robert Tonyan has not gotten involved at all. A guy that they wanted to showcase in the preseason, and honestly, I think still gives you a lot from a receiving upside perspective in a 13 personnel set. They just haven't really involved him a lot. So that's something that I'm very interested to see as it goes forward. But those are your tight ends for Kansas City, and it's honestly, outside of Travis, there's not a ton of actual upside from a receiving aspect. You have good players that are fine as the two and threes, but no one that can you can really see being a little bit better going forward.
Yeah, Noah Gray, 2.3 yards per target this year. It's on nine targets, so 21 yards. Not a lot, but still not where you want to be. All right. Let's move over to the defensive side. Well, I'll ask one question about scheme before we get there. Is the Ravens have a weakness in inside linebacker in terms of coverage that is at least perceived? I think in the last couple of weeks they've been out physicaled by a couple of lines, but the Browns and then again against the Lions, they got very out physicaled by both those lines on both sides of the ball. But the question this week I would ask is, do you see Mahomes has picked apart the Ravens linebackers? Mm-hmm. It's really what it's been the case. And to the point where they really can't even try anything against him in terms of a schematic blitz. Is this still his game? Is it something he's still perfectly adept at in terms of reading hot very quickly, knowing where he's going with the football as soon as he sees a blitz coming?
Yeah, I think that's what you're probably going to see as well. Like, it's one of the things that sticks in my mind is that what they were doing to Baltimore last year in the week one with just those little glance routes where you just see motion out, you see the second level moving, you see just that little bit of space, and it's just turn your head, look for the football. And I still think even though they don't have Rashee Rice for that, Hollywood Brown can run those. He ran those a little bit in more of the RPO looks against the Bills last year in the postseason. Juju Smith-Schuster can still do that. You have to be a little careful, I think, with Travis running those because he has more attention. So you might actually see him in motion to bring more defensive gravity to Travis to find more space over the middle of the field. The problem here is that the Browns want to run the football. The Lions want to run the football. The Chiefs don't want to run the football. So out physicaling a second, honestly, and the Giants were a good example, a bad linebacker crew, and they didn't want to run the football. I think they were a little more efficient last week, and they finally got under center a little bit more, which is something I've been asking for a very long time. Under center and then running play action off of it is something that the Chiefs have, since Alex Smith, gone away from because it's not Patrick's identity, right? He's not the guy, but he's been much better at it. So I think that if the Chiefs were able to still do the same stuff with motioning here, you're still going to probably see Breshard Smith option move left to right there. They want to just kind of change that look of the defense right before the snap. And that plays into what Patrick has done so well, I think, this year, again, is finding that where the ball needs to go immediately.
All right. Outstanding. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. I always like to start with what are the Chiefs like to show in terms of a package on obvious passing downs? They play dime, or they committed nickel. What do they look like?
They're predominantly a nickel defense, but Steve Spagnuolo loves when he can get six DBs on a field. Like he wants to. So if it's third and 11, third and 15, you're probably going to see dime because he wants to be able to rotate things, change the picture last second. That's why we finally starting to see a little bit of Chamari Connor, who was the big nickel for the Chiefs, play more true two deep safety, where they want to rotate him down into the box, Bryant Cook down into the box. Christian Roland Wallace, actually, UDFA from USC 2 years ago, played a little bit of nickel for the Chiefs last year. He's playing more safety. He was the guy that got the pick on the deep over route to Wandale Robinson last week against the Giants. He played a little bit of safety there. You see he did really well tracking that, so I think he's earned some more reps. And then the emergence of Noel Williams, their third-round pick this past year, Jalen Watson playing very well as Trent McDuffie. I think ideally in some of those obvious passing situations, that's what Steve Spagnuolo wants to roll out there so he can change the picture. He can give you this. Also, he loves to blitz. As everyone knows, the DB's off the edge there. If you go tight, he was going to bring a nickel. He might bring both. He might bring the linebacker too. So there's a lot of different ways that he can change that picture pre-snap and post-snap that lets him get into the, you know, the mind of the quarterback a little bit and kind of mess with him.
Okay. All right. The Lions, by the way, I'll say this, did not have success rushing 5+ versus Jackson this week. It was about the only place they failed. They held him to 4 yards a pass when they were rushing 4, but with 5+, he was quite effective at beating that. I'm always kind of with a certain amount of temerity. We go into these games against Spagnuolo because he's had such success against the Ravens in past years. It's definitely one of the things we're concerned about. All right, let's talk about the defensive line and in particular, there are four-man line, obviously. Let me leave that open to you. On passing downs, I'm asking. And what do they look like in terms of snap management and rotation of that group?
So they do want to keep fresh rotations in the defensive line. That's why they typically have four or five defensive ends. Obviously, with the injury to Felix Ndiki Uzama, they've had to change their philosophy just a little bit. Leo Chanel, who is a linebacker picked, you know, out of Wisconsin in the third round a few years ago, has been like the utility man. We saw him play spy against Lamar Jackson last year. Like, he did that a little bit. He's very, very unique in his skill set. He's bumping down and playing some defensive end for them, as well as more of a stand-up rusher. So he, from time to time, they'll be in nickel, but it's three defensive linemen and three linebackers with Leo Chanel attached as that defensive end. So it gives you a little bit of a different look. And Spags will change that as well. He'll bring Drew Tranquil around, so where it looks like a 3-4 defensive front. So you have three defensive linemen and two linebackers, but then just one middle linebacker. So it's like a 1-5 look. He's being more unique with it, which I really appreciate. But typically, you know, you'll have Chris Jones and the guy who never comes off the field, and George Karloftis. Ashton Gelati's mixing in. Charles Menehue's moving around. Omar Norman Lott's getting some mix as well. I think that they're doing a good job of mixing in Jerry Tillery here and there, as well as getting Omar Norman Lott the reps that he actually needs, and then Ashton Gelati some of those as well. Because even though he's not the best pass rusher, he gives you that juice, right? And he knows how to use his own arms and leverage well. He's always working. He finds ways to get after the quarterback if he can, which I do appreciate. So they definitely want to rotate guys in and out. You'll see some drives that start off without Chris Jones, and then if it comes to a third down, he'll come back onto the field. So that they want to keep a healthy rotation for sure.
Looks to me like Karloftis and Jones are both playing over 80% of the snaps, 168 and 163 out of 191 for the season. That's not rotating at all. But
I mean, that's more than, again, for Chris Jones, typically it's been more rotation, but they've had to rely on him a lot more this year. So that's more than I expected from Chris anyway, for sure.
Okay. All right. And you've mentioned some of the linebackers in terms of blitz schemes, in terms of who moves down to be an overhang and whatnot. Talk about those guys.
So Drew Tranquil is your will linebacker. He's next to Nick Bolton, who is the middle linebacker. He got the contract. He's the guy on the defense that Steve Spagnuolo trusts the most. If you go back to the Super Bowl against the 49ers, there's this really cool conversation that Steve Spagnuolo has with, I'm forgetting his name, but he does this interview after he talks about the decision after the 49ers had the 2-minute warning and they go back to a third down. He asks Nick what he wants to call. So he trusts Nick Bolton with everything in this defense, schematics, lining guys up. And mentally speaking, he's done everything that you could ask of Nick Bolton. Very good against the run, typically a very sure, good, a very good tackler in between the tackles. He gets downhill quickly. And then Drew Tranquil, who was formerly of the Los Angeles Chargers, former safety as well. He bulked up to play against the run better. And this year, I think he's playing with better football. Last year, you saw the drop-off in coverage. I think he's been a bit better this year overall, but he is more of that will linebacker. Not the best sideline to sideline still, but again, good cerebral player. And then you've got Leo Chanel. These are the three guys they have out there when they do have three linebackers out. But they're for the most part, those are the guys that play. And Leo plays everywhere. He'll play wherever they want him to. And just that chess piece that gives Steve Spagnuolo something that he can play in coverage. He can take him on a blitz. He can have him rush the passer. So it's a big round of linebackers, Nick Bolton being the exception because he's not big, but he plays bigger than his size. But it's not the most uniquely diverse from a coverage standpoint.
Okay. I'm looking at Bolton in terms of his missed tackle numbers. It seems like there's been some degradation in his tackling over the years, in particular last year and this year. If you combine the two, don't look all that good. Is there general concern in Kansas City about that, about him not being the tackler he once was?
I think what we're seeing is the shorter arms are starting to play more. Like he's taken some hits. I think Cam Scadabo did a good job of doing the same thing against them last week, where you see him meet Scadabo in the hole and he just misses that tackle. So it's definitely a concern, considering, you know, Derrick Henry is coming to town, and that's not something you really want to see. And typically in the past, he's done a good job on Derrick Henry, but there is that we don't know with him. I do think naturally he'll level out because that is his identity. It's identity to come downhill and be a good run first linebacker, but it's definitely something to monitor.
Okay. All right. Outstanding. You did talk about the secondary a little bit easier, but take us through piece by piece in terms of what their strengths and weaknesses are.
Yeah. So Trent McDuffie can do everything. Like we've seen him be an all pro outside. We've seen him be an all pro nickel. Like he can do anything you want him to. Extremely smart football player. The secondary hinges on where he is. And I think that now, because of some injuries, because, you know, they bring in Christian Fulton last year, who was one of the guys that I failed to mention, played for the Chargers last year, been banged up with the Titans before that. He's already been banged up again this season. So he's not playing right now, which has forced Noah Williams, that third round pick that I mentioned, to play more, but they've been able to rely on Jalen Watson, again, former seventh round pick out of Virginia Tech. And he's been, again, playing very good football, more of that outside corner, not necessarily someone who's going to follow a receiver everywhere, but you give him that quarter, he can play good man coverage. He's finally turning his head around a little bit, where you see him get that interception last week against Malik Nabers. He plays that red zone go route extremely well. But again, he's not someone I want carrying around the field, like playing pure man coverage. Quicker, he's not going to be good in those situations, but cover two, cover four, and then vertical man coverage, I think he's very, very good. The safeties are constructed in a way that everyone, their best strength, their best ability is probably playing in the box. So Brian Cook out of Cincinnati a few years ago, better out of the box. He was a downhill, want to hit you first kind of guy. When they constructed this, Justin Reed was still there. Obviously, he's best in the box as well. Mm-hmm. So if you can think, you know, Troy Connor was a nickel, too high safety at Virginia Tech, who is best probably playing in that robber or underneath role, good against the run, best as the big nickel. And then you draft Jaden Hicks, who I love Jaden Hicks coming out of Washington State. Like I had him as a second round player, like my safety two on my board, and then he falls to the fourth round. I think that there's a lot more upside there for him to do everything, but still best in the box as a big nickel, as a too high safety. Go ahead.
So there's a funny thing I hear from defensive coordinators a lot about how our safeties are real versatile. They can play anywhere. As soon as I hear that, my antenna go up and I say, that means you don't have a true free safety. That's what that really means. That's what you're saying. And you know, the Ravens have been kind of fortunate. Last year, they might have had two true free safeties and then a couple of them didn't work out and they still kind of figured out what they had. But teams, you really need that free safety skill set is hard to come by. It's very hard to come by.
It's extremely difficult because it's not just the speed. Everyone says, oh, you have speed, you instincts. Can play. It's instincts. Yeah. You have to know where the ball's going. You have to be able to break before the quarterback is throwing that football. You have to read those route concepts and see what DB is losing leverage. Where is that ball going? Like, I need to be able to get there now. So you have these guys that are great coming downhill, and now you're saying, hey, I need you to turn around and go the other way. That's not how Brian Cook, who has been predominantly the free safety in Kansas City over the past few seasons. But Spags has finally kind of stopped playing more cover three. I think the last couple of seasons he's dipped into cover three a little bit more. But coming off this game against the Giants, he played the most two high safety sets he's ever played as a defensive coordinator in Kansas City, which probably is more of a Russell Wilson stat than it is a Steve Spagnuolo stat. But I think it also shows you where their strengths are. And because they're rotating guys in and they want to bring guys down and put them back out, it shows what they can do schematically. It's not going to be a ton of single high stuff, which they realistically can't get away with unless Roland Wallace gives you more of that, which we're going to find out. I think that he wants to test out his skill set in that situation. But those guys, that room is a lot of big nickel box safeties that are playing too high and sometimes single.
So as a Chiefs fan, well, I don't know that you really bear any grudges on Russell Wilson, but you mentioned that the too high was really a Russell Wilson stat, and that's Russell Wilson loves to throw outside the numbers, so you want to have the entire field cover on the back end, as I'm sure what you're getting at. How does it feel as a Chiefs fan to kind of give the lethal injection to Russell Wilson's career in terms of what happened?
I hold no ill will for Russell Wilson. Like I got nothing against him, right. But I personally don't. My decision is that I think this was a bad move by the Giants. It's someone who's trying to save his job because Jackson Dart, while there are obvious parts to his game, throwing the ball down the field, he's a tough runner. He's going to give you more from a scramble standpoint than Russell Wilson does now. Mm-hmm. I think the strengths and weaknesses of their game are still relatively similar. He wants to hold the football. And what is your offensive line not built to do? Pass protect right now. So it's cool to see it happen, because after he threw 450 yards against the Cowboys, he just laid a bomb against the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football, and he gets benched because of what they were able to do. I just think Steve Spagnuolo knows Russell Wilson inside and out, and the game plan he built for him was just almost executed perfectly.
Okay. Outstanding stuff. We really appreciate it, Daniel. I always finish by having you name one player on each side of the ball that you think really matches up well against Baltimore.
Yeah, I think that this one's going to be another Leo Chenault game, where I think his versatility in terms of, I can play defensive end, I can play a little bit linebacker, I can even spy Lamar Jackson if I have to, which we have seen, is going to pay off a little bit here in this football game. On the offensive side, I wish I had a really good answer, because if Xavier really doesn't play, I don't think they have like a true advantage. However, you talked about the inside linebackers maybe having a little bit less cover from a coverage standpoint. I do think Juju Smith-Schuster matches up well there because of his savviness, because of the mental ability to just kind of sit down in zone. And we've already seen him be like that guy for them this season. If they have to continue to rely on him, I think some of those spot routes, curls, just clear that linebacker and sit down, you might see him have a bigger game in that regard.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Really, really great. Daniel, tell folks where they can talk football with you online if they want, and where they can find your material.
Absolutely. I really do appreciate it. You guys can find me on Twitter at InHarmsWay19. That's where all of my tweets and stuff go. That's like formerly where clips and stuff go out. I also work at rgrfootball.com. It's a YouTube channel. I do film breakdowns every Wednesday. And this year, I also work at Bleacher Report on their scouting department. I will be breaking down corners, safeties, and tight ends for the upcoming draft class.
Very cool. Okay, we might be contacting you again to do one of the positional draft shows if you can make time for that, Daniel. Would love to have
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening as always. Try and find that one additional person who is not yet aware of the Film Study podcast and have them listen to it, even if you have to play it directly from their phone from the website. I will greatly appreciate that. Like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. And thanks again for listening. Daniel, thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.